Hello.
Hi, friends, and welcome to
The Bitchery of History.
My name's Max.
I'm Allison.
And this week, I'm talking to you about Kawashima Yoshiko.
This week, I will be talking to you about Agent 355.
It's a spy
episode. Get ready. She doesn't even have a name. You know nothing.
No, not
Agent 355.
We've never done a lady whose name we didn't know.
Yeah.
We've done women who had code names and women who have had,
yep.
who've changed their names, but
just get ready.
Just
get
lost
ready.
To history.
Get ready.
All right. So, Kawashima Yoshiko, born into the imperial clan of the Manchu-led Qing dynasty.
Whoa.
In 1907.
All right.
She
buckle
was
up.
The 14th child of 38.
Holy mackerel, from one woman?
She was 14 of 38. Yes.
No, I'm serious. One woman gave birth to 38 kids?
I don't know if it's the same mother for all of them.
Right. I mean, same father is a little more doable.
But she is an official princess.
Wow.
Yeah, so she's a Chinese princess.
Holy cow.
Turned spy. Oh, you buckled in?
I am you buckled in.
So her birth clan, the Aisen Joro, I'm sure I'm pronouncing that incorrectly, she is born with that name plus another name. So it's Aisen Joro Janyu. And in 1912, when the empire is dissolved, her family is actually dispossessed, which basically means that they lose their position. A republic was put in place instead of the empire.
Okay.
And so not only do they lose their position as royalty, they also pretty much lose their status and their
right.
income source and all that other fun stuff. And actually just 3 years later, she is given by her father to one of her father's friends and political supporters. His name is Naniwa Kawashima, who was a spy and a mercenary.
So she was given, but just doing the math, correct me if I'm right, she's eight
correct
years old
if
at
you're
this
right.
point? Correct me if I'm wrong or if I'm right. You're a man, right?
Ouch.
Oh, this is so
she's
1912.
Yeah,
she's 8 years old
she's
and
eight.
She's given to a spy.
She's given to
is
a spy.
Is there a movie? I just want to watch the movie right now, immediately. Yeah. Hit play. I'm making popcorn.
So she's given, like, the dude says, "Hey, can I have your daughter?" And the guy's like, "Yeah, I have 37 other children. You take whoever."
Wow.
You take whoever.
Wow. Like, given in marriage? Or
she doesn't marry.
Okay.
But she's given as daughter. And then this father, he's a spy and a mercenary. He's not the best person to
I mean, that depends
live
on what
under.
You want to do with your life.
Well, apparently he indulged her warriorness and her, like, her hard-headedness, like, her forward-thinkingness.
Stepdads are everything.
But
get
then
it,
he also
oh, no.
was prone to anger and no. would chase her around the house with a shovel and
what?
Possibly, allegedly, sexually assaulted and raped her.
Ugh.
So
okay, I'm not into this anymore.
So not a healthy environment.
Clearly.
No matter what it is. And in fact, he had taken her from China and moved her to Japan.
Holy
because
cow.
He was Japanese.
Okay.
So and
all
this
right.
is, he changes her name to Yoshiko Kawashima.
Okay.
So this is, I mean, already in the first 8 years of her life is a Whew. Bit of a whiplash
yeah.
in every direction.
Holy mackerel.
When he assaults her, allegedly rapes her, she cuts off all of her hair. She resolves to only dress as a man from now on. And she says, quote, "I decided to cease being a woman forever."
I mean, can you blame her?
Not at all. Not at all. She made quite an impression in the Japanese countryside because she would ride her horse to school, as befitted a Manchu princess. And her education actually included both judo and fencing.
Yes.
So
sign me up.
It's like this weird...
Everything.
There's no way you're going to replicate this childhood anywhere.
Yeah.
Anywhere. 1922, her dad actually dies without ever having seen her again.
Mm.
And her mom, who was his second wife and a concubine, followed him into the afterlife by committing suicide.
Oh, boy.
As was
fitting
tradition.
Great. Yeah.
And so the next period of her life is actually a little bit hazy. She disappears into the Tokyo underground for a little bit. Most sources have her taking a series of rich lovers, both male and female. But beyond that, we don't really know where or what she's doing. Gotcha. There's a brief break in this haziness in 1927 when her brother and stepfather arrange for her to marry this man named Ganjurjab, who is actually the son of an Inner Mongolian general named Genjurjab, who was famous for having led this Mongolian-Manchurian independence movement in 1911.
Okay.
And it would appear that the marriage was for political purposes, because she's a princess, right?
Right.
But literally the only record of this dude and his father is from the 3 years where they're married to each other.
Yes! Oh, snap! Look how the tables have turned! History! Oh, I love it! Oh, yeah.
And so...
Suck it, dudes. You forgot.
Right. Yes. And so she actually also gains a nickname during this time as well. She's known as Dong Zhen during this time, which literally translates to Eastern Jewel.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Hello.
Once free from the marriage, she moves to Shanghai, where she settles into the foreigner's corner and gets right back to politics. And espionage.
One name. How could you not?
Goes right back to it.
I mean, she literally knows nothing else.
One name that sticks out in particular is a lover by the name of Ryuichi Tanaka, who is a Japanese intelligence officer. He's remembered in particular, not least because he is successful in using her connections and past royal status to kind of expand his network as well to further their causes, but also because they're living together during this incident that's known as the Shanghai Incident, which is an event that actually many believe was a precursor to the following war between Japan and China that happens after World War II. And
so, World War II or World War I?
Two.
Okay, just trying to follow timelines here.
Right. So this is 1932.
Okay.
At this point.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
So, and I'm going to give you a brief rundown of the Shanghai Incident because it actually it helps shape the rest of her life. What we need to know about the Shanghai Incident, and this is going to be very quick and dirty, is that for a while now, in fact, for centuries at this point, China and Japan have been on a war footing with each other.
Right.
And right now it is like at a head. I mean, the year before, Japan had actually successfully invaded China and had taken a large part of the northern part of China.
Okay.
And the start of this particular incident, which is a 3-month affair that would see casualties in the order of upwards of 25,000 people, is actually murky to say the least. Some say justifiably that the justifications for the fighting were instigated actually by the Japanese army trying to get the Chinese to attack them so that they'd have casus belli, the means to go to war. And in January 18th, 1932, there's 5 Japanese Buddhist monks who are members of this ardently nationalist sect who are beaten near Sanyu Factory in Shanghai by Chinese civilians.
Yikes.
2 of them are seriously injured. 1 of them dies. And in response, they burn the factory down where they were beaten by.
Oh boy.
During the ensuing melee, a police officer is killed and several more are hurt. And in response to that, the Chinese residents of Shanghai actually took to the streets in order to call for a boycott of all Japanese goods.
Right.
To make a long story short, the next 3 months of fighting are ruthless and bloody.
Okay.
Chinese numbers swell to about 50,000 infantry, while the Japanese numbers swell to over 100,000 infantry.
Wow.
80 ships and 300 airplanes.
Wow.
There are brief breaks in the fighting. At this point, the League of Nations is involved. You have the United States, the French, and the United Kingdom, who are engaging in diplomacy, trying to broker these ceasefires. And they do have a couple of them, but none of them last for very long.
Yeah.
And they do very little to stop the Japanese, actually, as the main aggressors. The Japanese eventually completely overwhelm and set flight to all Chinese resistance.
Right.
Most notably, actually, this army called the 19th Rout Army. They're a group of private army, essentially, because they're loyal to a local chieftain.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually pay this army to stay away because they don't know whose side the army is going to be on.
Okay.
And the 19th Army, even after being paid, proves loyal to the Chinese and they come back to try and give fight to the Japanese.
Okay.
Eventually, the League of Nations passes a resolution demanding a ceasefire. Representatives are sent to put an end to the conflict, once and for all. They give the city to Japanese until a year later when a Korean nationalist sets off a bomb at a birthday celebration for the emperor, killing the commander of the Japanese forces in the city. The city falls to the 19th Route Army, who had come back.
Yeah.
They set up their own government, which fails within a year because of infighting, and China has it back. So basically, it's 3 months of fighting, 25,000 people are dead, and nothing is different.
Great!
So at this point, Yoshiko is pulled out of Shanghai.
Okay.
And is sent north to Manchuria, which is this swath that the Japanese had taken over already. And what they're trying to do is they establish this puppet state known as Manchukuo. And Yoshiko is sent north to convince her cousin, the former Chinese emperor who had been deposed at 6 years old, to become the emperor of Manchukuo. And the idea was that if we put the heir to the Qing dynasty, the actual previous emperor, there, it creates legitimacy. It creates an actual...
Seems real.
Right, foothold of power. But this is also where we get the Manchurian candidate.
Right.
So Yoshiko becomes actually an active and increasingly visible part of this new state.
Cool.
She makes appearances on radio broadcasts and dresses almost exclusively in military uniform in all of these public appearances, pictures, and everything that's released.
Yeah.
She becomes actually quite iconic. There are numerous fictional and semi-fictional stories that are printed, not just in newspapers, but in pulp fiction novels as well about her. And she even releases a record. She has a record of songs.
That's cool.
That is released during this time. And while all of this is happening, she had also organized a cavalry force consisting of about 3,000 to 5,000 former bandits who acted as a counterinsurgency force against anti-Japanese guerrilla forces.
Just on the side, I'm doing this small project. It's a passion project. I just need about 4,000 people with horses to come in and just like destroy.
Literally.
You in? Cool.
Cool. Yeah.
Put me down for 3 horses. Thank you.
For all of these exploits, she is known in the Japanese press as the Joan of Arc of Manchukuo.
Yes.
Right? She essentially does the same thing as Joan of Arc.
On board.
She helps a dude who otherwise would not have become the head of the state to become the head of the state.
Yep.
And then she's given up for... Yeah, just wait.
So
the good times only last for the duration of World War II.
Okay.
From...
oh, God, that's such a bad sentence. Well, you know, the good times ended once World War II was over. Oh, boy.
It's this interesting. For me in this research, it feels almost as if, like, you know how Wicked, one of the best descriptions of Wicked that I could find is it's as if someone took the cameras while they were filming The Wizard of Oz and just panned them to the right.
Yeah.
And you realize that there's all this whole world happening outside, right? And so you think we focus so much on what was happening during the Holocaust. There was a whole nother theater. There was a whole nother war.
The Pacific.
Exactly.
Check it out.
From what I can tell in the research, I don't know exactly what did it, but at some point, Yoshiko has a change of heart near the end of the 1930s.
Oh.
Some historians believe that it's her old Qing heritage reawakening.
Okay.
Some say it was an opium addiction. Others say that it was just a disagreement with how the city was being run, right?
Yeah.
In the execution of the plan. All of that being said, what actually happened is that she begins taking these very vocal and increasingly critical stands against Japanese control of Manchukuo.
Right.
In particular, taking umbrage with the brutal tactics for suppressing dissension. Amongst the populace, which really puts her in kind of an untenable situation because at this point, she is way too visible to be a spy anymore.
Right.
But she's also way too unreliable to be used for propaganda.
Right.
So she's basically sidelined, lives out the rest of the war in relative obscurity, which really is like a stunning fall from grace from this woman who was putting out albums and having stories written about her.
Wow.
When World War II ended, agreements between all the parties and in the aftermath of the war included the dissolution of Manchukuo, because, of course, the Japanese lost the war, and it's returned to the Chinese, And the city, which is now under the control of the People's Liberation Army, quickly sets out to arrest Yoshiko. Because, and it's important to stress, that this newly minted People's Liberation Army was made up of those groups that Yoshiko had been leading cavalry forces against when Manchukuo has been established. So you could understand why they'd be out for her blood. Just a little angry.
Yeah.
And so she goes on the run for 2 months. She successfully evades them, but then is arrested in Beijing on November 11th, 1945. She's imprisoned for 2.5 years. She's put on trial. It's actually quite a lengthy trial. And her main defense was to claim that because she'd been naturalized as a Japanese citizen, they were trying her for treason.
Okay.
Because she'd been naturalized as a Japanese citizen, she should be tried as a prisoner of war,
right,
not as a traitor, because you can only be a traitor to your own people.
Right.
And this argument was rejected, one, because she had never officially...
become Japanese.
She'd never officially renounced her Chinese citizenship.
Oh, man.
And they were relying on this old concept of international law that says wherever your parents are from, you're a citizen of that country.
Okay.
And so they were like, dude, you're Chinese. We reject your argument. And they found her guilty, and she was sentenced to death. And so on March 25th, 1948, while imprisoned in Hebei Model Prison in Beijing, she was shot in the back of the head. And her body was then put on public display in contravention, actually. Her final wish, her final request had been that she be given a private execution. And they refused because they wanted to make her as an example. I should caution you, if you go to do more research, or if you go to look up pictures, or if you go to Google Yoshiko, there is actually a picture of her dead body on display that is readily available and readily findable. In fact, it's on the Wikipedia page for her. And while it's not particularly gruesome, you can see the exit wound on her forehead. So viewer discretion is advised. Just be aware. Just
good
be
to know.
Her body was eventually collected by a Japanese monk who saw to its cremation. Mm-hmm. And the remains were sent back to her adoptive family in Japan, where they were interred at Shorinji Temple in Matsumoto.
Are there any movies made about her life?
Not that I am aware of.
Like Chinese movies, Japanese movies?
I'm not sure. We'll have to
look that
up a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah. But talk about
it. It's a story.
Oh my gosh, yes.
It's a miniseries.
I mean, right from the beginning of her life, she was set up to live under some very harsh reality. Really, the moral of the story is don't give your children away, I guess. One of the many morals.
Yeah. Don't get involved in a land war in Asia.
Yes. Yeah.
So, Agent 355.
Oh my gosh.
Who was she? Where was she born? When was she born? Where did she die? Don't know. Nothing. We know almost zero about her. Agent 355. Or 355, however you want to say it, you know, solely two available pronunciations, operated in the Revolutionary War spy ring of Abraham Woodall during the Revolutionary War. Side note, the AMC show Turn is about this spy ring. I've only seen a few episodes. It's excellent. I have not gone back and watched more, so it's not that excellent. but it is good. And also, Jamie Bell plays the lead, and he's beautiful. Yeah. So, I mean,
Big fan.
Worth it. Mm-hmm. It's on Netflix.
Oh.
I feel like the show is
I feel like it's on my list.
Now. It's on my list. Mm. But if you want more information, there is a dramatized version of this. So the background of the spy ring. In 1778, Benjamin Talmadge, who was a young American officer and General George Washington's intelligence chief.
Oh.
Hello. He organized a top secret network of spies, and Washington ordered that not even he himself should know who they were. Washington didn't want to know. So for recruits, Talmadge turned to old friends and acquaintances in his hometown of Setauket, Long Island. Abraham Woodhull was chosen as his agent, but Woodhull, whose code name was Samuel Culper Sr., so a lot of times it's referred to as the Culper spy ring.
Oh, okay.
He very quickly fell under suspicion of British counterintelligence because he took frequent trips to Manhattan, and that was kind of like, hey, buddy, what are you doing?
What's up there?
What you doing?
Mm-hmm.
So Woodhull recruited a relative living in his sister's Manhattan boarding house, a dry goods merchant named Robert Townsend, whose codename was Samuel Culper Jr. I mean, ingenious names.
And was there a Samuel Culper III and the fourth?
There was not that I'm aware of.
Oh, okay, okay.
There is a whole whole book on this subject as well. Now, they, between the two of them, Abraham and Robert, used a variety of tricks and techniques. They also included using a type of invisible ink developed by John Jay, who is the brother of future Chief Justice John Jay.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically just provided all sorts of intelligence to American military leaders, of course, most notably being George Washington. Townsend then becomes the ring's central figure, and he gathered information about British forces in New York City and passed it on to Setauket tavern keeper Austin Rowe, who would then ride 110 miles into New York to buy supplies for his tavern, quote unquote, often carrying coded messages, coded messages written in invisible ink back to Setauket in Long Island. And then Caleb Brewster is another ring member and Talmage's childhood friend. Was captain of a whaleboat that raided British shipping along Long Island Sound. So since Brewster was a well-known figure, it was not always safe for him to land his boat in the same spot. So he had six landing places, and he would go to different ones. Now, Anna Smith Strong, woman in the ring, but not Agent 355. But Anna Smith Strong, she lived nearby on Strong's Neck, and she would signal Brewster the exact location that he could land at by using her clothesline and a certain number of handkerchiefs hanging out to dry.
It's like semaphore.
It's pretty great. Now, Robert Townsend's early reports to Talmage indicated that he could get good information on the British Navy, but very little on the British Army.
Mm.
And this situation continued for months until Woodhull mentions in a letter to Talmage, "I intend to visit 727, code for New York, before long, and think by the assistance of a 355, which is code for lady, of my acquaintance, we shall be able to outwit them
Agent all." Agent 355 means Agent Lady?
Agent Lady.
Agent Lady.
And this is the only written account we have of Agent 355 written down ever.
Oh.
Just one time. So we literally know nothing about her.
In passing.
Just like, I'm going to see a lady in New York, and I think she may be able to help us.
This is juicy.
It's believed that maybe she was a member of a prominent loyalist family in New York City with easy access to British society and British officers. It's also speculated that it was 355 who passed along the critical information that exposed the treason of Benedict Arnold to the arrest of Major John Andre, who was captured with maps of West Point.
You mean it was possibly a woman who brought down the most infamous traitor in American history?
Possibly.
Wow.
But again, we don't know.
Maybe.
Because they were spies, so they wrote everything in invisible ink and then ate the message.
They
did their
jobs well.
She did. Agent 355 is probably the best spy in history because we only see her name written down once and we know nothing else
because
about
of that
her.
One bastard that one who wrote time, her name.
Yeah, that one man.
Of course
wrote down
it was a
her
man.
Benjamin Talmage wrote a memoir, and he reveals a struggle to prevent the news of Andre's capture from reaching Benedict Arnold, who ultimately escaped, but Andre confessed and was hanged. Now, during this period, Abraham Woodhull's correspondence indicate that Robert Townsend and other Culper ring members fled New York City and went into hiding. And after about 2 weeks, sensing a decline in tempers, they returned. Things cooled down.
Sure.
But Woodhull then informed Talmage of the arrest of several of our dear friends, including, quote, "one who hath been ever serviceable to this correspondence," end quote, which we think is Agent 355.
Okay.
Because we know through other sources that a pregnant Agent 355 was arrested and questioned but refused to reveal any information on her activities or the father of her child.
Can I ask a question?
You can, but I might not know the answer.
How do we know? No one might know the answer. How do we know that Agent 355 is not like Agent James Bond? Like how the name James Bond is
because
given
it just means
to various
lady.
People. Exactly.
It's a fair question, and honestly, we don't, because it does just mean lady. Uh-huh. It is, I suppose, entirely possible that there would be multiple, because there were multiple female spies during the revolution.
Right.
And I'm going to get to another one later on in this discussion. So that is an entirely possible situation.
Uh-huh.
But to have taken such risks and also to be so well connected within the ring, I feel like it's one person.
Right.
Because you know, if I just walk up to you and I'm like, hey, Max, guess what? I'm going to tell you all this juicy news. Right. You might not trust me if we don't have that relationship and that history. True. So
or
that's my thought.
Or if it's not, Agent 355 could very well be a code word for something else.
It absolutely could. It absolutely could. But
interesting.
So very little is known.
Yeah.
Very little is known.
This is new territory for us, covering a woman that is like almost a concept.
She's like a ghost.
Yeah. She is like a ghost.
She's a ghost.
Oh my God.
Now, we do know a pregnant Agent 355 arrested, questioned. She refused to reveal any information.
She is a ghost.
Now, we do think that Robert Townsend may have been involved with Agent 355, possibly the father of this child.
Oh,
she was held in a notorious prison ship, the HMS Jersey in New York Harbor, and conditions on that prison ship were so horrific, and all prison ships.
It's a prison ship.
Yeah. She later gave birth to a boy, but allegedly died aboard the ship. The culpa reports then decayed significantly, which is why I think it's one person.
Oh, okay.
Because, like, one person falls out of the ring in the loop, and everything kind of goes to
there's
pieces.
A correlation.
And Robert Townsend does resume spying, even though it was very hard for him. According to family correspondence, Townsend lived out the rest of his days depressed, unmarried, and drinking heavily. Oh, so I do think that they were in a relationship.
Yeah.
Which I'm also like, because we know nothing, I just want to write the movie and be this is the real story, guys. Because we don't have any information. So it could be like anything that we want.
Oh my God. You get all the way to the end of this beautiful moving movie and there's just a title card that goes, maybe.
I love it. Remind me to tell you about my other idea for a female spy movie, because it is great.
Okay. We'll keep it secret.
Right.
Get it?
Now, scholars speculate... We will keep it. I love it. Scholars speculate that 355 was a well-bred lady from New York society, member of a loyalist family, because such a position would have given her access to officers.
Sure.
And, you know, you could just ignore... quote-unquote boring talk of troop movements and then just be like, oh, you're so cute, soldier, tell me more, la la la, I'm so bored out of my mind, stop talking about this. But I mean, keep talking about it.
Right.
She also perhaps could have been a maid in a house where British soldiers stayed.
Yeah.
But women spying on quote-unquote guests in their home was really nothing new. For those of you who don't know, I think for a lot of old-timey wars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even you see it in World War II when Germans invade Paris, but specifically in the Revolutionary War, the British Army would ride in and be like, this is our house now. Yes. Thank you.
We live here now.
Yes. And we have your cows and your horses and, you know, you will be our hosts.
That is why there is an amendment to the Constitution specifically prohibiting that.
Right. So in 1777, when the British were occupying Philadelphia, John Andre held a secret meeting in the house where he was quartered, and housewife Lydia Darrow snuck up to a closed door.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which is pretty brave. She wasn't even just like, la, 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 I'm not really paying attention. I mean, if she was caught, that would have been dangerous.
Death.
Listened in and subsequently warned General Washington of an impending attack on his army. And when the British army took to the field, it became obvious that Washington had been warned of their surprise attack, because it wasn't a surprise anymore. But during Andre's investigation of the leak, he questioned everyone in the Darrow household except Lydia, since he believed that 18th century women all held the same political views as their husbands. And she was like, deuces, bitch, it be me. I be telling people all the things you're saying. Like, do.
You know, we were talking earlier before we started recording about what our TED Talk is going to be when we give our TED Talk. I feel like one of our points should be underestimate women at your peril.
And you misunderestimate them.
And you misunderestimate them.
Is that a word?
At your peril. Well, it is now.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's amazing to me that he wouldn't even think.
Yeah. So Agent 355, she remains a mystery. Some would downplay her role. There are some people who say like, oh, she's only mentioned once. She probably wasn't that important. They got whatever information they could and they moved on. But if you look at the fact that after we do have reports of some female spy being captured and dying on a prison ship, and then suddenly the intelligence reports are no good anymore.
The correlations are too strong to argue that she didn't exist.
Right.
But there's not enough to argue with specificity right. who she was or what she did.
Which is why it, you know, will be interesting when I get back to watching Turn and seeing if they address it and if they say who that character is. Because Anna Smith Strong, we do have information about her. She is a character on the show. We know what she was doing and we have that historical record.
Yeah.
We don't for Agent 355.
And you know, it's interesting to me to go back to a point that you mentioned in passing, that George Washington didn't even want to know necessarily the identities of a lot of these people, because they still do that to this day.
Yeah.
I mean, a president becomes president. They don't just tell him all the secrets of the country.
Right.
Most of those are need to know. If you don't need to know, why are we going to tell you?
That's right.
They don't open up the book and tell them when aliens visited us.
Well.
They might. I guess I don't know. America's book of secrets.
You'll have to be president. So there are some people who would downplay her role. Others perhaps do make it too big. Mm-hmm.
Sure, of course.
Which is fair, but women helped win the war. That is a fact.
That is undeniable. Undeniable. Oh, I can't even say, after every time you tell me a story, I like to say her name again. We don't have a name.
But you can't.
Oh, she's a
Agent
ghost.
355.
Agent Lady.
Agent Lady, yes.
Sounds like you meet like a elementary school student meets a spy, and she goes, "Hello, Mrs. Agent Lady."
Yes, yes. Perfect. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you should leave us a rating or a review. We would be very grateful for it. You can leave those on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, nope, not Spotify, on Podomatic, on Stitcher, on Google Play Music, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts. Those ratings and reviews, they help other people find the podcast, which helps us keep doing this podcast. Thanks.
If you are stressing about the holidays and what on earth you're going to bring for your white elephant party or your secret Santa gift, whatever at work, don't worry. We've got you covered. Just go to thebitcheryofhistory.com, go over to the shop, order some stickers. You can get extras for yourself, because with 3 stickers ordered, it's free shipping anywhere in the United States. You could customize it, get a bunch. Those are going to make you a hit at the holidays.
Cause of the week. Yes. Our cause this week is going to be the National Women's History Museum.
You may remember that from one of our episodes in which we interviewed a member of the board. Remember that this museum is currently all online. They're working on creating a physical museum in Washington, D.C., and you can help them do that or just learn a lot more about other amazing women from the American Revolution, including Agent 355, Lydia, Deborah Sampson, who we've covered on the podcast, and many, many others. Mm-hmm. You can visit them
at womenshistory.org. And that'll do it for another episode of The Bitchery of History. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode. We could not do it without our amazing, fabulous, wonderful team. Shout out to Jeanette,
Kim,
Jess,
and Sydney.
If you'd like to stay in contact with us,
you can go to Facebook, just search The Bitchery of History.
You can go to Instagram, just search The Bitchery of History.
And if you go to Twitter, you guessed it, search The Bitchery of History.
Of course, you can also get us at thebitcheryofhistory.com, where you can contact us as well.
Don't forget,
bitches get stuff done.